Welcome, 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 welcome to the 16th episode of Pints of Football. We are back after a two-week hiatus. Himanshu has finally found time in his still new, somewhat new and busy schedule in his new job. And on this week's episode, we are going to discuss what, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but definitely the biggest club in London, definitely the most exciting club right now in England. That's Arsenal. And to break down this historic club and discuss where the club is going to go this season, we are joined for the first time on this podcast by a guest, one of the few ardent, honest and dedicated Arsenal fans that both Himanshu and I know, Shorjo. Shorjo, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kumara. I've been following the both of you since you guys kicked it off. And this has been pretty amazing for me. I tune in every week and it's a lot of fun for me to listen to your thoughts. And so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Shorjo, I have a question, right? It's very easy to understand when somebody became a Manchester United fan.
Bunch of the really elder kids who would be sitting like the back benches in the bus and be discussing on Monday morning the games that happened over the weekend. And there'll be a few, like one or two Arsenal fans fighting against eight Manchester United fans. Because that's just the way it was. That was Arsenal in their pomp at their prime. Between in the early 2000s until 2005, I would say. And yeah, I mean, I heard about the club around 2002, 2003. Started watching a few games here and there, not because I wanted to watch it and I could switch it on. Like, my guys, like, remember that we had like one television at that point in time. And during weekends, your parents will not allow you to watch football at 8 in the evening. They want to watch their soaps, you know, whatever drama they want to watch. But if I could catch like a glimpse of the games, it would be great. And I was like really kind of taken by the style. Arsenal were always, I've always been a very stylish team.
Can't deny that.
Yeah. And the Invincibles were, of course, a factor. And then I was talking to the old uncle, like a friend of my father's, and he kind of taught me about like, oh, this is Arsenal, this is Arsene Wenger, which I thought was kind of like, oh my God, did they name the club after the manager? That is amazing.
Like all of us, we thought same. It was his club.
Yeah. Yeah, and at that point in time, we used to have these amazing shows on ESPN, right? You know, that would cover like that would cover the league.
Football
and
focus.
I was looking at some of the football focus and all of that, and like the weekly shows and all. So I started watching a bit of those because those used to be in the weekday, right? So I could take the television after school. And I should love Arsenal from there onwards. And then the first game, I think every football fan has like that one emotional moment.
Yeah,
when they really fall in love with their team or a player or something. And while I was always enamored by Arsenal, I was definitely taken over when they lost the Champions League final in 2006-07. Yeah, I was so dejected and felt rejected. I would say since 2006 is when I started watching each and every game possible. But it's around 2003 when I started following that club.
But did you get the chance to gloat during the Invincibles era? Even though football was not exactly family primetime viewing material?
I didn't have a lot of friends, honestly, at that point in time who were watching football. It was around 2006, 7, 8, and Manchester United fans, like, you know, when we started being in class 10th, class 9th, class 10th is when I started having more friends watching football and we started discussing it. It's at that point in time when discussing football and dissing on your friends for football became like a thing. And by that time, I think Arsenal were I would say on a decline. They would have that moved away from tier S to like definitely tier A.
Yeah, I think that 06 to 09 period, Manchester United fans were at their most obnoxious. I think their obnoxiousness had just peaked during those 3 years.
Oh yeah, I think Arsenal and Chelsea fans, regardless of their differences, will admit that growing up with Manchester United fans was traumatic.
Yeah, I mean that makes you know enjoying this Manchester City phase easier because I just don't know any City fans. So it's like, yeah, it's a neutral party which is winning. There's nobody to gloat and dance in my face. But yeah, that's an interesting journey that you described. You probably started watching football earlier than what maybe both Himanshu and I started.
I used to definitely watch international ones. And I could always go, oh my goodness, this is Henry who is playing. In 2004, France in the Euros, he played well. And I could like sort of say, oh wait, this guy used to play for us. Which I thought was cute. But it wasn't, like I said, 2006. I think the first season after Highbury was the first season that I watched of Arsenal, pretty much every league game. I could not watch Champions League games because they were like too late in the night. And again, I was in school, right? There's no way my parents would allow me to be up at 2:30 in the morning.
That was a struggle for all of us, Champions League nights. But moving from the
Yes.
past to the immediate past, which is last season, my first question, both Mamshu and I have been dying to ask you, is did Arsenal bottle the league? 50 points out of 57 at halfway in the season. And then after that, in April, you just threw the league away. Three draws, one defeat. It all just turned. So do you think Arsenal bottled the league?
I would say that Arsenal definitely bottled the league. Now, context matters, right? So before the season, if you told Arsenal fans that they're going to have the season that they did, like, nobody would have believed it. But if you ask me, like, I would say around the 30th minute of that game against Liverpool when Arsenal were 2-0 up, is Arsenal going to win the league? I'm like, yeah, most definitely going to win the league. And what happened from there was basically like a proper encapsulation of the entire season that I have seen, I would say, at least twice. So once in the Leicester winning season, and once in that season in which Manchester United won, like Eduardo had his leg broken and William Dallas was sitting at
five
the middle of the
draws
pitch
in a
against
row.
Birmingham City. Yeah, and this was like a surprising statistic for me, like that from the game at Liverpool till the end of the season, Arsenal had a form guide that put them around the 14th position of the league. And that is very telling.
Close to Chelsea's
And
position in the league. So.
But yeah, definitely the bottle. There's no doubt about it.
I was hoping some more banter over there. But yeah, I'm glad you accepted that Arsenal bottled the league. Both Himanshu and I do feel that. But where do you think it all went wrong? Because everything seemed to be in place. You navigated very well through the injury to Gabriel Jesus at the beginning of the season. Nketiah stepped in. You made some great signings also in January to, you know, plug in the gaps in the squad. Trossard came in. Jorginho, no matter what my opinions are on him, is still a capable body in some group who can plug in the gap in some games. So where do you think it all went wrong?
The Liverpool game when, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Xhaka went up against each other and riled up the Anfield crowd. That's what everyone says.
But I think one thing I will say about Mikel Arteta is that he's had to... The team, if you look at the team that he had when he came in, it was a trash team. It was absolute garbage. I have no idea how a team like a club like Arsenal, regardless of the fact whether they can spend money or not, a team like that. So he's taken his time to basically put together a very, very good 11 now. But when it matters to get like a particular result, one thing I've noticed is that things have to be absolutely perfect for Arsenal. And when things are not perfect in terms of personnel, at least, these guys struggle quite a bit. And it happened last year as well, when they, again, I would say, bottled a pretty, what should have been an easy finish to the top, for a top four position. Once, again, injuries to key players started happening. We had injuries to Partey and Tierney, and then we had Xhaka playing as left back and Elneny playing in as a CDM. And the quality of the team's performance and the control that they had over games, it dropped off a cliff. Same thing happened this season as well, but to a much more important player, which was William Saliba.
Yeah.
Once Saliba went out, Holding is fine, okay? Like, Wenger, he had this quip about him when Holding was actually playing well. Like, this was like a long, long time back. Was that he had a good game. I think it was against Chelsea in an FA Cup final. He played well against Costa. Because Costa used to just bully the shit out of Arsenal players. He had a good game, and Wenger said that, nobody appreciates Rob Holding because I didn't pay 50 million for him. I'm glad that Wenger did not pay 50 million for him because that would have gone very bad given the player that he's become now. But Holding did okay in a few games, but there were games when we needed him. Like, he gave the penalty away against Liverpool. Yeah. Then we had games against West Ham. He did not turn up. I think Arteta kind of set him on the defensive line against City at the game at Etihad to fail. But he got absolutely bullied by Haaland,
yeah.
And there was, no redeeming quality. He's not Saliba. Saliba is a good player. He also has deficiencies in his game. But one thing Saliba is that it is very calm, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And we lost that. But it's not just Saliba though. Saka has been tired for a long time, been playing a lot of games. Not as many games as, let's say, someone like Bruno Fernandes. He's definitely been playing nonstop for a long time for a young player. And it's sort of taken a toll on his performance. I would say in the last third of the season, post the game against Manchester United at home, There were like very few games when he actually played that well. Arsenal don't have title winning experience that I would say that would be like, let's say, something like John Terry's. Yeah, sure. We have Jesus and Zinchenko, and the entire narrative in the middle of the season was, you know what, these guys are doing well because now these guys have these two guys who obviously are making the team play better, but they also know how to win leagues. Nah, these guys are not it. Like, when you're down in the doldrums and you're chasing a game, and Arsenal were chasing games. So the number of times they went behind
Especially in the
at
second
home.
half of the season, yeah.
Yeah, the number of times they went down, but then down to up like by two goals against like bottom half teams at the Emirates. No way under like a title winning.
What was the game where Nelson scored that last minute winner? Was it against Bournemouth?
Bournemouth, yeah.
I couldn't believe Arsenal won that game. I was really hoping that's where it all capitulates, but.
I was. Adi and I were at like a concert. Adi and I were at a concert, and we learned about it at the end of the day. At the end of the concert, and we were just jumping. This is like after everybody had left in the concert, we were jumping, and we were like, "Wait, you guys turned up like 2 hours late." But yeah, I mean, see, Xhaka is not is good at leading the team, but he's not like John Terry. He's not like someone like, let's even Rodri for that matter, who's gonna just grab underperforming players in the middle of a match by the back of their necks and like, you know, make them perform.
Remember when Zinchenko tried something like this during a game that they were trading? I think it was against Southampton. He called everyone in, made a speech, and then it made a blunder in the second half again.
Yeah. Even Odegaard, I would say, he's the captain of the team, right? So I think I really like Martin Odegaard. I think he's a very classy player.
Definitely.
But when he's not on, when he's not on it, Odegaard, he can definitely disappear. And it happens a lot of times, especially when he's when we're playing away from home, and there's something that he can work on. But again, you know, Arsenal were missing.
He's a different kind of a captain. I think there are captains like Roy Keane or a Terry, you know, who are boisterous, and there are others who have to lead by example. No way I'm saying Odegaard is like Messi, but Messi, again, either he disappears on games or he shows up in games. And if he shows up, then he leads the team by example. But this whole point about Arsenal's defensive frailty, especially in the second half of the season, I mean, it's truly true, because if you look at the XG of the team in the first half of the season, Arsenal had an XG of 1.5 or more only three times in 19 games. But the second half of the season, that XG was 1 point, rather XG against them, the expected goals against Arsenal was more than 1.5 at least eight times. That's eight out of 19 games. They also lost the ball more often. More often, there was lower success rate when it came to their passing. And as a result, Martinelli and Xhaka were having to do more number of dribbles. And I think one part you're bringing out interestingly, and that's a great segment to the next segment, is what does the squad need? Because it did feel like at some points in the season, the squad was a bit stretched. Like, he did try to plug the gap in by bringing in Trossard and by bringing in Jorginho. But still, as you mentioned, Bukayo Saka was overplayed. Martinelli at time was overplayed. Emil Smith Rowe was probably not used to the extent that Arteta could have used him. So I think these are some of the points we have brilliantly captured as to where.
No, I think this is pretty much it. It's very, like, I remember when the two of us, when we were discussing these factors, like, we were very confident that Arsenal would actually win the season. We
I
were
know.
Both hoping they wouldn't, but it kind of did happen. And I mean, these are pretty much, I don't know, it just felt like that one point where William Saliba got injured. And they didn't have cover for that position. In January, wherever they were deficient, like, for example, as you said, Jorginho came in for Partey. They had the Brighton attacking midfielder, what's his name? Trossard, who came in as well. They got good cover in certain positions, but they just didn't expect maybe Saliba to falter. And they probably overestimated what my holding would do. So, yeah, this is where we stand, I guess.
Let's move now to the season which is at hand, right? The upcoming season. Again, looking at all the teams on paper and all the transfer rumblings, Arsenal seem destined to be now, I think after a long time, a team which will surely finish in the top four, but also seem poised now. We can, at least after a long time, we are seeing before a season starts that Arsenal will mount a title challenge and will begin the season as the favourites over Liverpool against City. So let's look at the Arsenal squad, right? In our last episode, we had discussed that teams are in two stages. Either a team is trying to evolve and therefore they have to make a lot of number of signings in the transfer market, or a team is trying to go to the next level and you need two or three of those precision signings to take you to the next level. And Arsenal definitely seem to be a team which is going to the next level, and that's why we are seeing Arteta and the Arsenal board going out there and spending on two or three players who can really elevate this team and keep them consistent throughout the course of the season. But let's start by analyzing the squad. Let's go position by position. Goalkeepers, we are totally sorted, right? I mean, we all agree that Aaron Ramsdale, irrespective of his theatrics with the opposition fans, he's a solid choice in goalkeeping, right?
Yeah, I would say that he's I would rate him 7.5 out of 10. I'm okay with him. He can do better in terms of his shot stopping. He's not Davide.
Oh my God, United's goalkeeping will talk some other day.
Yes, Premier League pedigree. He's won it.
That's why you let him go. Shambolic the way United has treated, but okay.
Oh, please.
Keeping De Gea aside.
Yes.
Now, moving to this defense, right? And I think it's important to now look at the defense and the midfield, considering it's going to be a long season for Arsenal. They are there in the Champions League. Europa League, I mean, you can say they treated it seriously, stopped treating it seriously in the second half of the season. But Champions League is something Arsenal will be treating seriously right from the get-go. So now looking at the Arsenal defense, we have Saliba, Tierney, Ben White, Gabriel, there's Holding, Tomiyasu, Zinchenko.
And
apart from
Bird.
All of this, sorry. So Shorjo, are you happy with where the squad is now defensively? How would you see Arsenal's defensive lineup look now? Because I have my reservations and I'll point them out once you have said how you see this back four playing out.
I think Gabriel and Saliba as a starting center duo, I think they are fine. They are pretty solid. Gabriel, sometimes he has brain fart moments, and Saliba also has like a slightly weird moment in him every now and then. But I think it's fine. Both of them are relatively young. And the only thing is, do we have enough cover for them if they get injured? With Timber coming in, I think White can now move back to a center back position in case either of these two starting center backs get injured.
So you're saying White will no longer then be a starter, right? Once Timber comes in.
I don't expect him to, because I think he's going to put Timber as the right back and expect him to play a similar role to how Zinchenko plays it when Arsenal are in possession.
So you're saying Timber and Zinchenko, they both then come in as inverted fullbacks in a way as the game goes on.
Yeah, I don't know when this transition will effectively be like at 100%. Maybe in the beginning of the season, it'll still be White. But I expect Arteta to move in that direction eventually.
But there were quite a lot of instances last season when Ben White used to overlap when Saka used to cut inside. And he was very effective with his cross as well. I don't see Julian Timber, capable of playing in that position because he's had actually zero crosses last season. Ten Hag used to use him as a right back a couple of times in the overlap as well. But then he stopped doing that and he's mostly shifted into centre-back position in a very dismal season for Ajax. So that might actually become an issue in case, Arteta sees like going back to the traditional right back who overlaps with the winger. I don't see that happening at all.
So in that case, are we saying that Timber will be that mobile player who will probably fill in at centre-back or right-back when needed? Or are we saying that Timber will be the first choice at right-back and Ben White becomes that player who can at times play as a centre-back and go as a right-back?
You don't buy someone for £40 million if he's not first choice, man. I don't see him not being first choice, to be honest.
And I think that's where I have my reservation, because White is one of those players, I don't know if he can deliver for an entire season at the same level of quality. I mean, he can be fit an entire season, but yeah, that's one of those positions where I felt that Arsenal could upgrade. But we agree that between Timber, White, Saliba and Gabriel, there is some cover if one of these players gets injured, right? The other three can rotate and fix the gap. And obviously,
a lot of games to play for them.
And obviously, then we have Tomiyasu and Holding also to plug in the gaps. But what happens if Zinchenko gets injured? What happens on that left-back position for Arsenal?
Yeah, that's definitely the weakest position that Arsenal have. I think it was one of the reasons for which Arsenal also kind of bottled the league was they did not have proper defensive cover. I don't think Zinchenko is a good defender. He's not that good one-on-one. If you put him in transition again, he's not a very good defender because he's not that quick. He cannot win headers. He's not physical. His positioning is very suspect. As opposed to Tierney, who is not as good as Zinchenko on the ball unless he's crossing it. So there is an attacking gap, like tactical gap between Zinchenko and Tierney, which is why Arteta prefers Zinchenko. I think the expectation right now, I think Tierney will leave first and foremost. I think Tierney is going to get sold, which leaves Arsenal with only Zinchenko as a proper left back. But from what I understand, Tomiyasu has played at left back for Arsenal. He's done a serviceable job defensively, not that good attacking wise. And Timber also, last season especially at Ajax, he played left back as well. And again, serviceable job. Not his preferred position, but he can definitely slot in if someone gets injured.
And there's quite a lot of time in
But
the transfer season left. You never know. Let's say Holding and Tierney leaves, as he says, right? Maybe they can get a left back cover.
Tierney, according to me, is a very decent cover, right? So why is Tierney being moved on? Is it Arsenal's decision to move on, or does Tierney want more playing time outside the club? What is exactly driving this
I think playing time is a
sale?
major concern for Tierney because he came in as like the superstar from Scotland, right? Because that's the best that Scotland could do. And he's not, he had an injury. And then after that, he, Zinchenko came in and he's not had like good spell at left back. Again, but what Zinchenko brings to the game in terms of passing and playing as an inverted left back is not something that, you know, Tierney can do. Tierney is a very traditional left back, I would say. So maybe Tierney moves on to maybe like a Newcastle or something where, you know, the expectation is very, traditional in terms of a fullback.
Newcastle don't have low expectations anymore.
In terms of fullback, I'm saying. So maybe if that happens, then. But what I'm hearing is as well, Tierney is really unhappy with, in terms of his playing time. So that's both those reasons.
That left back area will be a concern. I think if Tierney goes out and relying an entire season on Zinchenko, and especially if Zinchenko gets injured, as can happen, it's going to be a very tricky area for Arsenal to navigate. Do we think that? Tomiyasu can really play an entire season as the first choice left back?
Not really. I don't think so. I think he can do a good job here and there. Maybe again in a game where Arsenal are playing a low block again. Let's say, I don't know, maybe Man City or Liverpool. But I would really worry for Arsenal if he's playing week in week out.
Really,
think
a left-sided, left, you know, leg player. I think in that position, at least, have good cover
the
position.
The bar is really high right now in the league. Like if you look at Liverpool and City. When Liverpool were winning, like no, before last season, they were competing with City because they had pretty much a perfect team. In fact, you could almost argue that they're a better 11 than Man City. And City now have like a perfect team. You cannot have any gaps in your 11 if you want to compete for the local.
Especially with
clubs.
Guardiola coming in, City's defense suddenly becomes even more stellar. We obviously now know that Arsenal have made two big signings, right? Havertz is there, Declan Rice is coming in. We know Timber is almost done. With so much money already spent in the window, is there more money in the bank to actually buy a left back cover, let's say a quality player to be that cover in the left back position?
I wouldn't be surprised if Kroenke pulls money out of thin air. Actually, they're offering basically what is low interest and zero interest loans, right? They're expecting to recoup it a few years down the line when they sell the club. That's their model. But they might be willing to loan further, but I don't think another move for Arsenal is going to come before sales. I think the likes of so we got what, 25 million for Xhaka. Then Holding is probably going to go out as well. Tierney, let's see what happens with them. We have the likes of Nicolas Pepe, who's actually coming back from his loan.
Totally forgot about him.
I was surprised when I saw his name on the Arsenal squad on the website. I thought he was sold for good.
Yeah, and Nuno Tavares as well. We still have a bit of clowns, right? Masquerading
Tavares,
as football players.
Right. Totally forgot Tavares. He's left-footed, right?
He's left-footed,
And he's actually had a decent season for, I think, Marseille or someone.
Yeah, he had a very good goal-scoring season for a left-back. But yeah, Arsenal have to move players before they can buy another one.
Is there an outside chance that Arteta tries to shift to a back three? Considering he has players who can play in multiple positions, that a back three is something he should be planning in pre-season, considering the lack of cover on the flanks.
It's definitely possible then. But the thing is with the back three is that you need proper wing backs. You need players who have very high stamina, who can run up and down the wing all game. And I do not
wing backs. Yeah. Now I think
Arsenal do not have any player of that profile. We do not have any player of that profile right now.
That's supposed to be too many wing backs.
I think definitely then he has to buy a cover on left back, especially if Tierney leaves the club right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving from the Arsenal defense, right? We are moving to the midfield now, and there's a lot to talk over here because this is where the bulk of the money has been spent in the transfer window. But let's look at your current midfield, right? We have Partey, Odegaard, Saka, Jorginho is there. We have Vieira, the other Vieira. Elneny, again, I was surprised is still at the club, but he's there. Xhaka has left the club now, and we have Emil Smith Rowe. On top of all of these players now. Obviously, the money has been spent. Kai Havertz is an Arsenal player for 65 million with a couple of millions in add-on. And then we are hearing Declan Rice is coming for a full upfront payment of 100 million pounds with, again, apparently 5 million pounds in add-on. Let's start with the Declan Rice signing. This is equivalent to Jude Bellingham's transfer to Madrid, right? This is one of those two marquee signings of the summer. There will not be more money spent unless Mbappe moves from PSG. This is the biggest signing of the summer. This is the statement signing. Declan Rice actively chose Arsenal over Manchester City. This is the club he prioritizes after being coveted by so many clubs for so long. The question firstly I have is Declan Rice worth 105 million or 100 million plus 5 million in add-on? Not over where he plays or where he goes, but is this a player who's 100 million pounds worth?
I mean, vanilla terms, like without looking at, let's say, what how long his contract was, that he was the captain of West Ham. West Ham does not want to sell it to another English club. And all these, you know, complexities, you forget that. And just look at the quality
left,
of the player.
Did he have 1 year Sorry? Left?
He had 1+1. So the club had an option to extend him, yeah. And the fact that Man City came in and there would have always been interest in terms of people, you know, other clubs driving up the price. Is this worth, 105 million is going to be paid for that Declan Rice over the next 2 years? Is he worth it? And the answer is no. Right now, the answer is no. The only way we can say that he might be worth it is that if Arsenal become a title winning side that he's a very key component of, he becomes the captain of the team and he plays a very important role in terms of marshalling the midfield, the defense, scoring important goals in important matches, and basically be the player that Arsenal have been missing in the last 15 years, the proper leader. If Arsenal have a successful trophy filled, let's say, 5 or 6 year period, then I would say that's the only way you can justify 105 million price.
You're almost in asking to terms. Be like probably a Roy Keane, right? A Roy Keane for Manchester United, or let's say a Luka Modric for Madrid. Not exactly the same style of playing, but that's the kind of impact you're saying he has to have on the club over the course of his contract, let's say. But keeping the money aside, are you as excited about Declan Rice as, let's say, a lot of people in England are, or as Himanshu is excited over Declan Rice? I'm sure if he had come to United for 100 million, he would have been ecstatic. Are you as excited about Declan Rice as a player? Let's forget the price tag.
I like Declan Rice. I think he's a very good player. Does he get me really excited? Like, will I be like tuning in to say, oh my God, Declan Rice is playing today? I don't think he's that player right now for me. He does take Arsenal to another level, for sure. But he'll definitely have to earn the right to be like, you know, the kind of player that Arsenal fans will be saying that, hey, you know what, Declan Rice is amazing. This is a very exciting signing. I personally am not there yet. Let's see how the first half of the season goes.
But money aside, he really does make that midfield very solid, right? I think when you see a starting lineup with, let's say, Declan Rice, Odegaard, okay, Havertz, but let's see anybody else who starts over Havertz also, but it suddenly the team becomes more solid as opposed to looking at a team with either Partey or Jorginho. Rice does make that midfield more solid, right? You expect more control in games now.
Most definitely. I think Jorginho did a serviceable job. I think he's still a classy player. There's a reason for which the likes of Sarri and Guardiola wanted him. In fact, if you were to leave Guardiola up to him, like up to himself, then he'd probably try to get him as a backup. Right? I think Partey had a very good season. The first two thirds, he played amazingly and then he fell off as well. And he always has an injury issue. Declan Rice is extremely resilient. He's always available. And for Arsenal, I would say, you know, for an important position, for an important player, like you can almost say that, you know, availability is the best ability. And so I will take him. I will take him from that perspective. He's defensively really solid. His passing is pretty good. He's very good at carrying the ball. But one thing that I'm always afraid of is that he's coming from West Ham, that under David Moyes have been playing fairly defensively. And most of the good work that Rice did was in front of a back three, back four situation, very close to his own goal. And every now and then, the most brilliant things that he would do would be when he's going to be carrying the ball from edge of his box till, you know, I would say like beyond the center, beyond the center circle. That's where a lot of the good work would be done by him. With Arsenal, the entire team is playing about 30 meters higher up half the time, right? And when I see him playing for England, for example, he does a very good job. But is he like the best player in that midfield? I think he's very important. I don't think they can replace him. But the likes of Bellingham, for example, where they do a much better job. So I would really like to see what Declan Rice does when he has to play in a much more attacking-minded team than West Ham. Because that is like a different ball game entirely.
And
I
it's
mean,
actually very surprising because multiple times in his interviews, right, with Gary Neville, etc., he's always said that I don't like to be maybe in like the number six defensive midfield situation. He really thinks he has good abilities going forward. So I assume that he plays probably a replacement for Xhaka. And that doesn't look like what it's going to be. I'm hearing rumors about Thomas Partey being moved on as well. So if he becomes a number six, he's actually kind of cutting down what he thinks is his, natural attacking instincts. So if he becomes that, someone who has to sit in front of the back two in this case, and then has to be more defensive, I'm not sure how he kind of, fits into that role because he feels like he's a lot better going forward. Very much similar to what's happening with Enzo Fernandez, who's, rumored to have been having these conversations with Pochettino that he wants to go up front. He wants to be more mobile rather than sitting in that, pivot position.
I mean, see, again, with the price tag, Rice definitely has to start. But there is a difference, I think, between even being that number six for Arsenal and being a number six for West Ham. Simply by being a number six for Arsenal, he will have more chances to go up front. He will still be doing, his roles will be more offensive. And the tricky part, about comparing Rice and Partey statistically is, for example, Partey plays more through balls than Rice. He surprisingly tackles more than Declan Rice. But again, Rice has more interceptions, clearances, and change of play. But again, he has more interceptions, clearances, and change of play because he plays at West Ham. So he has to do those things more. So in a way, the things which Partey was playing, Rice has shown us promises, right? Where he can run ahead with the ball. But as I think Sergio pointed out, he really has to now show those subtle attacking sides of his game, and come up in crucial games, occupy a space. He almost has to be that Rodri-like player, who's sitting in front of the defense but is still in threatening positions. And he's making those, he's showing that game IQ and occupying those dangerous positions frequently within games. And we have
I think
never
that's
seen him
probably.
do that, but he has shown promises of being able to do it.
I think that's even possible for him to go, more like be more progressive if, let's say, Zinchenko and a Julian Timber, sit or become inverted and sit in midfield. So that's possible. I think that's a fair point. So if Declan Rice then sits in that position, he has a little bit freedom to go up front as well.
And I think for Arsenal's sake, they should try to keep Partey. I think unless Partey gets an offer from Saudi Arabia, as every other player seems to be getting these days, given his fitness problems, there will not be a lot of teams of Arsenal's pedigree, right, in Europe who would be looking to sign a Thomas Partey.
Yeah, and they don't have cover in number six, actually. If Partey moves, it'll just be Declan Rice, I think.
Jorginho is there.
And
I
of
mean,
course,
come on, you
Elneny.
can't discount him. I will
Oh,
definitely say
and
Jorginho is a great cover. Are you saying?
Elneny, by the way, who got
Oh
a
my
contract
God.
extension in January. Who got a contract extension in January, by the way. So he's not one of the players that Arsenal are selling. So, yeah.
Moving on from Declan Rice to the player who brings Champions League winning pedigree, big game experience, big game goals. Touch, tease, elegance, amazing on the ball, can play anywhere across the pitch. The player Arsenal has chased for so long this window, Kai Havertz. Everybody seems to have an opinion on, nobody seems sure what Havertz will bring to the table. So, Sergio, how do you feel about the Kai Havertz move?
I really like Havertz's profile. I think it's very unique.
I
He
do.
is,
I agree.
yeah, like you said, he's technically very sharp. Passing, especially around like in very small spaces, pretty good. He can actually properly leather the ball. He's got a very good shooting technique as well. At Chelsea, he kind of also added how to head a ball to his repertoire, which I think he had to do because he's playing center as a center forward at times, like most of the times. Which I think is interesting as well. He might switch them from time to time. Like if he's chasing the game or if he's defending, depending on how the game goes, he might switch the players out. Like he might sub Jesus out, put Havertz forward, and then put another midfielder next to Rice, which could be Jorginho or Partey, or move Rice away from 6 to an 8 and put Partey as the six over there to make it a little more defensive minded. But I think Havertz will. And Jesus will have to keep splitting time at the center forward position. But primarily, I think Havertz will be playing as a left center midfielder, kind of exactly as like what Odegaard does on the right. If you see the heat map of Arsenal's team, like the passing map, right, it is so heavily gravitated towards the right. So little actually comes from the left side of the midfield. And that's because Zinchenko does not stretch the line. He slots into the midfield as an inverted fullback, right? And it almost always leaves Martinelli by himself. And Xhaka was always good at circulating the ball last season when he did not have a lot of defensive duties. But I think this will make Arsenal a little more symmetrical because Havertz can definitely pass the ball. He can take, he can accept the ball, and then he can progress it forward. He can also play key passes. And one thing that I'm really excited to see from him is actually when Saka and White and Odegaard on the right side get into crossing positions, you might actually see Havertz kind of slotting in between the gap between Martinelli and Jesus to head the ball in or tap the ball in for a particular cross that comes in. So from an attacking perspective, I think he could be very, very interesting. But I would like to see from the preseason itself how Arteta wants to integrate him. I think he's definitely an improvement over Xhaka. Is he worth 65 million? I don't know. But I'm very excited about this one.
No, it's funny because when this Havertz signing happened, right, everybody was confused where does Kai Havertz actually play or what his best position is. And then suddenly now over the past 1 week or 1.5 weeks, we are beginning to hear news in the media that, oh, now Havertz is definitely going to play as a number six. It's almost like Arteta and his camp are, providing some assurance to the fan base that there is a plan behind. Because, come on, this news has to be coming from somebody within the club, right? That there is a plan for Havertz and this is where he's going to play. The biggest problem with Havertz as Chelsea has been, and I think it was also a problem with Mount, is nobody knew where those players have to play, including them. Every game they would be playing in different positions. So, and it didn't help these players, right? Some players enjoy that kind of fluidity, like a Bernardo Silva, but there are others who require very clear direction as to where they are going to play on the pitch. And I think Havertz is one of those players. So you're right. I think if game in and game out, he's starting in the number six position, I think we'll start to see him deliver his best football. And that too, we have to keep reminding ourselves. He's an extremely young player, right? He's what, 23, if I'm not wrong, or 24? So he's extremely young. My question is, at Arsenal, we have primarily seen, Odegaard be that player. Odegaard has been the guy who makes those runs into the boxes, who plays like a pseudo number 10. Do you think there's somewhat of an imbalance between both him and Odegaard are now doing it this season, or will Odegaard stop doing it and Havertz will be the man tasked with making those runs into the box?
I think Odegaard will still be the primary playmaker on the right side. It'll just be more shared, like, but the I think Arteta now will be able to create a system where we can also have the ball on the left right now, because this guy can do, I would say, 80% of the job that Odegaard can in terms of keeping and the little tiki taka, the bit of it, the tippy tappy passes that Odegaard likes to do, and every now and then he's gonna find the space to actually put in a pretty good ball in terms of his vision. So I think it's something that Havertz can do. But I think another reason for which Havertz is going to be put in that left-sided number eight position, I think,
Sorry, not number six, number eight, yeah.
is that if you think about the way Arteta has been approaching it, and this kind of came into being, like, at least it was more visible last season, is that he's not, we don't have an Haaland, right? We don't have a Victor Osimhen. I don't think Arsenal will be able to have those players anytime soon unless Jesus overnight and becomes that player magically. So we are going to have to distribute goals across the board. And last season, Arsenal had what, four players? The only team in the league that had four players with more than 10 goals, right? Which was the case. No, five players, I think. Martinelli, Jesus, Saka, four players. Martinelli, Jesus, Saka, and Odegaard. The only player in the attacking system who did not have 10 goals was actually Xhaka. And he wants Havertz to come in and fill in that gap as well in terms of goals so that he can keep the goals distributed and also move that ceiling in terms of how many goals you can score a little higher. I think a little bit of symmetry and more production on that left-hand side is basically what Arteta wants to see.
I
I
feel like
also
he's
think that
given.
Havertz scores, sorry, one last thing. I think he also performs pretty well in big games, which I cannot say is the case for a lot of other Arsenal players. So,
Yeah, he
yeah.
definitely has that mean streak in him. I think in big games, he likes to get into those fights. He likes to become aggressive and he shows the tenacity. That's
But who's
something
he
I can
replacing? He's
always say.
replacing Xhaka, so he was much better at
I think he brings a lot of the footballing aspect which was missing from Xhaka's game.
No,
I
I
think you
feel
bring
like.
in a very interesting point because Jesus, again, also I think lacks the instinct of a proper number nine like a Haaland or an Osimhen. So he likes to drop back constantly. And I think that's where Havertz can move constantly into the box. He can make those runs off Jesus between the lines. And the interesting stat is that last season, Kai Havertz actually made, even the obviously because he was playing as a centre forward, but he made the most runs behind the line after Erling Haaland in the Premier League. So on one hand, you can see how miserable Chelsea's midfield was that they could never read his runs. But yeah, that just shows this is a player who is also accustomed to running into the box time and time again. And I think with Odegaard and Bukayo Saka and Martin, there'll be players, you know, who will be picking his runs. And if Rice is anything what he promises to be going forward, even he'll be able to do that. So again, a lot of promise everywhere from Havertz. Sorry, Mom, so you were saying?
No, I feel like somehow Mikel Arteta is trying to build that prime, you know. Remember how Barcelona used to play with Busquets as Declan Rice now, and then Odegaard as maybe an Iniesta, and Xavi where, you know, Kai Havertz kind of comes. And that's the kind of midfield he's buying. And I feel like, you know, the lack of maybe defensive effort will be then filled in by the right back and left back who will be inverting. So it's actually pretty exciting to see where they're kind of going, you know, with this squad. Initially, we had thought maybe Kai Havertz doesn't really fit in. I remember discussing this during a previous podcast because we thought, so what, Gabriel Jesus then cries and sits on the bench? That's not going to happen, right? So now this kind of makes sense if he's like a direct replacement for Xhaka with a few goals as well.
I think, yeah, definitely he is building a team which is somewhat more fluid. We are seeing Timber, Zinchenko, both will probably be coming in, becoming inverted wing backs. With Declan Rice, there's more mobile. Okay, Declan Rice and Partey, you can say, have similar mobility, but Rice or Partey being that focal point of stability. And then your entire front line is actually full of players who can do multiple things. He's bringing in a lot of fluidity into that starting lineup and into the overall positional play of the team. I think he wants to be more offensive next season. He does not foresee Arsenal facing a lot of, let's say, defensive duty. So this whole team is being geared to play and be more proficient in the opponent's half of the pitch. And I think it's probably the right thing he's doing.
About Havertz's defensive sturdiness, like, will he actually be willing to put in a shift? That's a
I was going
question.
To come to that, because that's one part, I think, where Granit Xhaka was really, really good at, was providing that defensive cover. And at times when, let's say, Partey moved ahead, he would be able to, you know, just sit back. Now, it's really a big question that if Rice makes that marauding run up front, who is the one who sits back? Because both Odegaard and Xhaka, Havertz, are not naturally inclined to, you know, even routine, momentarily fill those positions.
No, I think that's where kind of these fullbacks inverting will probably come into play. Like, much like how Man City played last season towards the end, where Nathan Ake and I forget who it was on right back. I think John Stones were inverting. So maybe that could happen, seeing that they're not really buying, you know, proper fullbacks. So that's a possibility as well.
I think Havertz is good. It's really interesting because Arteta has really gone after him. Declan Rice, you know, if Rice fails, I think people are less likely to blame Arteta. It'll be more like a promised English player did not fulfill his potential. But Havertz is the gamble. I'm really interested to see how it plays out. I really want to see him do well. But again, for a player who's spent whole of last season playing as a centre forward, I think there will be some gestation period before he truly starts delivering in that number 8 position. Before I move on from midfield, what role do you see Emil Smith Rowe playing for Arsenal? Because he did show a lot of promise, right, 2 seasons back. But for some reason or the other, he's never been able to break into that starting lineup.
I think the role he'll fill in is to, you know, abide by FFP, because he'll be sold and there'll be some income coming in. I just don't see how Emil Smith Rowe will sit on the bench next season.
I mean, you need players to move in and out quickly, and he's definitely one of those high-value players.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's a very good player. I really like him. I think the first thing for Smith Rowe right now is to get his fitness back. Regardless of whether he's at Arsenal or if he's at another club, he even for the under-21 Euros, which finished yesterday night, right? He was coming off the bench for the team. So right now, he's not back to full fitness. We don't know what he looks like right now as a player. It's a bit of a question mark. But I think he'll stay at Arsenal. I think he will probably slot in as on the left side of the midfield as an 8, because you need to rest players, right, every now and then. And I'm expecting him to definitely, if Arsenal have a good Champions League group experience, let's say they're able to close the group in like the first 4 or 5 games, like he might be actually seeing some minutes in the last 2 games. In the Carabao Cup as well, the first couple of games, if a player gets injured, I expect him to come back as well. But I think Arteta also likes Smith-Rowe quite a bit. And it's worth remembering, in 2020, when Arsenal were 14th, and Arteta, there was like a huge rumor mill going on that they might actually let Arteta go. Arteta made a change where he brought Emil Smith Rowe into the team. And I remember there was a game against Chelsea at the Emirates where Arsenal won like 3-0 or 3-1 or something. And that is from where Arsenal actually, it was sort of an inflection point for the club. And he was a huge part of, in terms, he played a huge role in terms of, you know, as a catalyst. And I think he has a lot of great qualities in terms of carrying the ball, in terms of assisting. He's got a very, very good goal scoring instinct. Definitely a role to play given the number of games. I don't think he's going away, but he needs to get his fitness back. And then whenever he gets minutes at Arsenal, he has to perform right now. There has to be production from him in terms of goals and assists. Otherwise, I think this might be his last season at the club.
For Arsenal's sake and for his own sake, I really hope that he does start blossoming and he does stay fit. And obviously, he'll also provide some much-needed competition in that midfield three position, especially if Partey goes down. Then, Odegaard, Havertz, and Rice, it's like nobody would be challenging the positions, and you never want that at a top-level team. So I think Emil Smith Rowe being fit and firing on all cylinders is also necessary from that standpoint. Moving to the front line, right? Arsenal's front line, whether it was Jesus or Nketiah, I think whoever was there played the job well. On the wings, though, I think that's where, apart from Odegaard, that's where the star players were. Martinelli and Saka were absolutely terrifying for any defense to play against in the Premier League. They fired on all cylinders. My question is, in the center of the pitch, what happens to Nketiah? Does the club keep him or do you think he goes away?
I think they'll have to keep him. There is no striker available in the market. Arsenal are probably going to let Vlerin Balogun, the other academy product, who's been a pretty who's had a very good stint in France. I think they'll
Exactly.
let him go. I think they'll let him go. At this point in time, there is nothing going on, at least in the newspapers, about Arsenal buying another striker. With Havertz coming in, yeah, we've got like another player who can play that position in theory, but they'll probably have to keep Nketiah. They'll have to keep Nketiah because it's going to be between Nketiah, Havertz, and Jesus. Mostly Jesus and Nketiah playing as center forwards, but every now and then Havertz will also have to slot in that position, is what I think Mikel Arteta will make happen. He's going to do. So yeah, I think he's going to stay. We'll need him for sure. We'll need him for sure, unless we get another striker.
I think we all know what Jesus offers, but I think this Balogun question, I don't know about the two of you, but it is the one which the Balogun question really fascinates me a lot. This is the one I've been thinking about. He scored 21 goals in 37 games. He's an academy player. And really the question is, what do Arsenal do? I mean, do they loan him out for one more season and see how he plays? Or this is the season where you start making Balogun, a part of your lineup. Jesus is not getting younger. We mentioned again, he's not a proper number nine. And this is the season where you start integrating Balogun to become that player for Arsenal. Because he, again, 21 goals in 37 games. It's very difficult to look past that.
I would say so. I mean, he's a very interesting player. I think he wanted to leave Arsenal, and like Hudson, the way he kind of, strong-armed the club into giving him a contract that was actually very high in terms of wages. He's been wanting, and he's been very vocal about this, he's been wanting to start for the club. He does not want to go for loan anymore. So Arsenal now will have to make a decision. Should we integrate him into the first team? And they can't promise him a starting nine position. If he comes into the team, he needs to hit the ground running in terms of production again. He needs to start scoring
Yeah.
goals. Right. I have a strong feeling that they'll probably let him go. If they don't get a good transfer fee, then they'll probably try to push him for another loan. I don't know if he'll accept it. He's a very interesting player in terms of a profile as a young striker, but I think one thing that a lot of Arsenal fans might tell you about Balogun is that while it looks interesting and his numbers are very impressive, he does not seem to have like one strength in his game that you can really rely on. He's not like too quick, or he's not too fast, or he does not have like amazing technical ability, or the shooting is great, or he can head the ball, or his positioning is amazing, like Cavani or something, right? He hits the mark barely in terms of a lot of these different attributes, and he's a well-rounded player. The second thing is that he scored a lot of his goals last season from penalties. And the third thing is that Lacazette, who left the league and went back to Lyon, he started becoming like the Lacazette that everybody thought, was an amazing, one of the top center forwards in prospects, at least, 5 years ago in Europe. So I think there's a bit of a tax. When you bring a player back from the French League back to the Premier League, there's always going to be a bit of a tax. I would say you can cut down their production, the same number of minutes, by like 50%. And then you can make an assessment of, okay, who this player is, and is this the player that Arsenal need? And at this point in time, I would say Balogun. Arsenal need to push for the league. Is Vlerin Balogun going to be a player who is going to play an important role in a title-winning squad? Let's say, in theory, if that's what the ambition is. I don't think the answer is yes. And
See,
given that he really wants to play now, he has to go.
Balogun's stock is pretty good right now. They actually do very well to sell him on, right? And Nketiah has also been very vocal about, wanting to start. I'm not sure if they can satisfy both. I feel like, let's say both of these create the wrong kind of noise in the squad, they'll have to actually bring in a backup who's probably not very, how do you say, motivated, not very ambitious. Someone, some kind of a number nine they can bring in to be a backup for Jesus and keep quiet about it.
I think if Balogun has to be at Arsenal, then you'll have to definitely move on Nketiah, because keeping Nketiah clearly gives the indication that he's third choice. And I don't know, it just seems Nketiah will be more willing to stay and fight for his position for one more season, let's say, as opposed to a Balogun. But it's a really interesting question, which he poses. I think a front line is also pretty much decided. Couple of other transfer rumors I just want to discuss before we look. I'm going to ask you, how do you think Arsenal will play this season? And not the formation, because we pretty much know what it's going to be, but how will the style of play change from last season? But there are a couple of other rumors we are hearing, right? Primarily regarding Xavi Simmons. Do you think this, in the range of 35, 40 million, almost the amount is going up to? And then Mehdi Taremi. There are two players we have been hearing about. Do you think these players make sense for Arsenal at this point?
I mean, we need another player who can play on the right wing. One player that we did not talk about. Yeah, I don't think he's going to come to Arsenal. And about Mehdi Taremi, I don't think. I don't think he's an Arsenal-like player. And the rumors have not been that strong. Something has to change drastically over the next, I would say, 8 weeks for Arsenal to actually consider this seriously.
And
None
I
of the
think
Arsenal tier ones have said they're interested in him.
I think Javi Simmons also has maybe like a buyback clause with PSG, which is very cheap. I think they're just drumming up interest so PSG acts soon. And I don't think he's bound to come to Arsenal.
Capping of our overall discussion, right, on the Arsenal squad, we definitely think they need somebody at left back as a cover for Zinchenko, because that is a position which is understaffed. In midfield, if Partey stays, then I think they have enough bodies, right, with Partey, Jorginho, Vieira, Odegaard, Rice, and Havertz. There are just enough number of bodies. And
Say El Neni,
similarly,
man. Just say him. Just say his
El
name.
Neni. I will say El Neni. Respect. Respect where it's due. And again, the front line. This squad seems big and capable enough at the end of the day to handle the grueling schedule, which is now going to be up there in front of him. Arsenal will end up playing north of 50 games easily. So now, with everything in picture, right, you look at the team or the starting lineup, which we have predicted mostly is going to be Ramsdale. There's going to be Saliba. There's going to be Gabriel. Timbers is going to start with Zinchenko. The midfield is going to be Declan Rice, Kai Havertz, Martin Odegaard, and the front line, Gabriel Jesus, Bukayo Saka, and Martinelli. With this team in place, how do you think the playing style will now change as compared to last season? What are some of the differences that Arteta is going to make to take this team to the next level?
I think Arsenal last season played well. They scored a fair bit of goals, but I'm expecting the team to actually did not have a lot of games where they would score, five goals, six goals, seven goals. And they'll have a team and they'll just like bash the shit out of them. Never happened. After three goals, and they felt that okay, you know what, this game is secured, they would actually step back. So the median number of goals that they had per game was actually pretty solid.
Not like
But
Liverpool, who put seven past United.
yeah,
I knew that
exactly.
was coming. I knew that was coming.
Or like City for at times, who just if they turn up and they start scoring goals the first like 10 minutes or so, it's gonna be a very bad day, right? Or the Chelsea team under I think was it Ancelotti who had there was this brief period of time where they were scoring like six, seven, eight goals pretty much
Under
every game.
Ancelotti, yes.
Yeah. Right. I think Arsenal this team has that capability on paper. But I think that's the first thing that will change for them. Like they'll probably have to score a little bit more. I don't think the expected assists will go up by a lot because it was actually pretty solid last year. The finishing has to improve. I think Havertz is a lot more clinical than I would say Jesus, and he adds a lot more goals in terms of absolutes. There's one more thing though, and I think this is one reason for which Arsenal had a decent season last year. But when you have a young team and they start getting into they cross that threshold in terms of performance that they're not expected they're not no longer performing once every three games something like now they're performing every game. I think Martinelli and Saka next season, one of these two guys is gonna hit 20 goals.
That's
I think it's
actually
one
one
of
of the
these.
questions I really do have for you is, I think last year was the year some of these players stepped from potential to like legit stars. I think Bukayo Saka is definitely a made man. I think Bukayo Saka is the real deal. I even think Martinelli is the real deal. I definitely think his numbers can vary. Some years he's close to 20, some he'll be 10, but I still think he is that player. I think Odegaard is that player. But do you think players like Ben White, players like Gabriel, who for the first time, you can say, you know, was stable for an entire season, do you think those players will be able to stay at that level? Or was last season like their purple patch and it's not going to happen again? Does that worry you a bit?
I think Gabriel, the player that he is, that's basically the player. That's his ceiling right now. I don't think he can get better than this. And White, I have a feeling, is going to be shipped out to the likes of Everton or West Ham in two more season stops. Even with Partey, if you think about it, Thomas Partey was bought for 50 million euros, right? And what he's essentially played two full seasons. I'm counting out an entire season because he's injured quite a bit. And now he's been pushed out for Rice. I think these guys as well will be moved out. But the likes of Saka and Martinelli, the club has tied them down to like long-term contracts. I have a feeling they keep it up, regardless of how long their contracts might be. The likes of, I don't know, maybe a PSG or Real Madrid or a Bayern might start sniffing at them very, very seriously. Or even City or Liverpool. Actually, Liverpool for that matter. If Salah, for example, he's getting older, right? They need somebody to play on the right wing, then they might start looking at Saka again. A Klopp has been a huge admirer of Martinelli since ages. So these players might be looked at by other clubs. But I think they are like the club has to build the entire team and the future around them for sure.
Ramshu, do you think that these players are now established proper stars, or do you think last season some of these guys had the purple patch?
I think completely agree with George. I think even in the previous episode, we really gloated about Arsenal's squad in terms of, you know, what everyone's achieved. Saka especially has looked like an amazing, you know, prospect for Arsenal and England alike. Totally agree. I feel like they're headed to some, and I'm very keen to actually, you know, go to the part of our podcast where we do predictions for next season. I'd love to see what Giorgio has to say, whether he'll be pessimistic or optimistic, but a big future for Arsenal, and they've just bought two future prospects again in Kai Havertz and Declan Rice. So yeah, it's a great age profile they're maintaining the team, and a big future for Arsenal if things go right.
I also think, you know, if Arsenal start doing, I mean, they are doing well now. That last season was a great season. But I think if Arsenal do the unthinkable, they win the league or they have a spectacular in the Champions League, I don't think a lot of players will leave Arsenal. I think London is one of those cities, right, where people don't want to necessarily leave London. It's one of the primary reasons Declan Rice is also has chosen Arsenal is because the desire to stay in London. So I think if he does well, players like Xhaka, Bukayo Saka, for example, can become that club legend, you know. Somebody like a Harry Kane, except with trophies, hopefully. Himanshu provided the great segue, Shorjo, as to what is given this squad, given all the money that has been spent, close to 200 million. I think net spend will be 160, 170 million. What is going to be a successful season for Arsenal now?
This will be Arteta's fourth season, right? He's had 3.5 seasons so far. 8-8-5. Right, that's basically been the position. 8-8-5-2 actually have been the position so far. Spend the most amount of money, right? Sure, Guardiola did not need to spend that much money because he has been spending it since forever. He's got like a lot of support from the club, and I would have to say after spending this much money, there are still gaps in the squad. Liverpool are going to be back. I think Liverpool are going to be properly back if Van Dijk is anywhere near close to the player that he was before his ACL injury. They're going to be twice the team overnight. And with the signings that they're making, and they might make even further, like the likes of Kolo Muani, I'm expecting them to be properly back for a title challenge again. City, you said, I think there's going to be a bit of a drop-off, but I think it's an illusion. City dropping off is a myth that people like to keep talking about.
With City, I think, you know, the interesting part is, I think Guardiola always figures it out towards the second half of the season. Yeah. So I think whichever team is, you know, leading the position, unless it's City, if that team can hold, I think that second half of the season is where I think City have come strong in the past 2-3 years. And I think that's where if Arsenal can start running from the beginning like they did this year.
Yeah.
And actually keep it up. That's what has to happen. I think, and I'll tell you, I know this is a bit of a digression, but I think the Haaland drought towards the end of the season, it's not talked about a lot. And I think next season he will not, I don't think teams will allow him to start off the season with that kind of a bang, which he was allowed this year. With Gundogan gone, with De Bruyne, not, in spite of the treble, not having his best season, I think it's going to be a bit tricky. And Himanshu knows, and I think everybody knows my views on Jack Grealish. So, I think it's going to be a tough season, no matter he signs Guardiola or whoever he wants. But I think it's going to be a tough season for them.
It'll just be tough for him to kind of motivate the entire squad to go do that treble season, you know, kind of a season again. But it's also good that he's moved on certain players like Gundogan. I'm guessing Cancelo will be moved on as well, and a few other
Definitely.
players who are probably not motivated enough to do what Guardiola wants. And hence, maybe the new players coming in, of course, they take a year at least to adapt to his methods. So if all these
But
things are
exactly, who's
happening.
the new player coming in? We have Kovacic, but apart from that, the rumors are that even Mahrez wants playing time. And then, I mean, yeah, he has Foden to come back into the season. He has enough tools to deploy, but I think it's going to be tricky. And that's where I think Arsenal again have a chance next year. But yeah, coming back to Arsenal, Sergio, what do you think will be a successful season?
So I think it's going to be between City, Liverpool, Arsenal, and I think Man United. People are not talking about them right now. I actually am a huge fan of Ten Hag. I know that you don't like him, Manish, but
No, I like Ten Hag. I just don't think the squad has in them to challenge for the Sizer title across 38 games.
But see, right now it takes 95 points right now to win the league, right?
Yeah.
That's basically what it takes. I mean, you can't drop off. The reason for
Yeah, you
which City
can't.
did not have 95 points this season was because Arsenal just dropped off. Otherwise, if
Yeah,
Arsenal
City
kept
would have
pushing
been
them,
motivated, yeah.
right, for sure. I think with the amount of money that Arsenal have spent, and that's basically what people will be judging them on, right? Especially owners. They need to challenge for the title. If they win it, then it's amazing. They need to have at least a quarterfinal finish in the Champions League. That's bare minimum. They have to go through that. There's a weird pot situation with Arsenal in the Champions League because they've been out of Europe. Their seeding has gone down a little bit. So they might end up being pot three, and that will change the entire dynamic of the Champions League
With
route. So let's see how that
Bayern
goes. So let's see how that goes. But mostly they'll be in pot two. So they need to have at least that. Plus, they need to win one domestic cup, bare minimum. And I'm not saying it's going to be the Community Shield, by the way. It has to be one of the
definitely
proper
not the
twenty three
Community
twenty
Shield.
four.
But who plays in the Community Shield? It'll be City Arsenal this time.
City and Arsenal, yeah.
I thought it'd be the semi-finalists. I mean, it'll be
No,
the
bare
runners up
minimum,
who get
one and
picked.
two.
But this is bare minimum. This is what you have to expect after so much. I'm not saying I'm expecting it. I mean, I'm saying this is what the owners will be expecting. Because the
So
Cronkies
who's
have
in the
never
league
spent
position,
any
by the
money.
way? I missed that. League position where?
League position, I think, is going to be second or third.
Okay, so
Realistically,
can't be
second or
third.
third.
It can't be third.
I think it's going to be second, most
See,
likely, but we'll
honestly,
have to see
second
how
and third, I
Liverpool
don't
do.
think it makes that much of a difference.
No,
So,
I think
it's a matter of.
the problem with this season was Arsenal led the. If Arsenal were chasing City, right, kind of like how Liverpool chased City, right, and with that 1 point gap, Arsenal are keeping up till the end. I think the narrative would have been different. It's because Arsenal led most of the season that it all looks wrong in picture. But I think if the title race plays out, you know how City Liverpool played out 2 years back, where they are up there till the end, 94, 95 points, 93, 92 points. I think that to me is a good season for Arsenal, where. Or
Most
City or other,
definitely.
even if it's Liverpool, I mean, whoever's leading. But my point is, Arsenal are there second, they are right neck to neck and giving a fight right till the end of the season. Basically, a season with no capitulations and where they are beaten because their team against them, hit all their go on all cylinders right up to the final game of the season or like
Perfectly put.
35th game of the season, possibly. That's
Yeah.
what's needed. I think if that happens, personally, if I were an Arsenal fan, I wouldn't even care about, my thoughts on the FA Cup and the Carling Cup. So I wouldn't care. But yeah, that and yeah, as Sergio mentioned, a Champions League quarterfinal or a semi-final would be spectacular. Himanshu, what do you think is a good season for Arsenal now? Because I'm sure you would have killed to have Declan Rice in the United midfield.
I think for me, it's probably going to be Arsenal chasing City for the title this season as well. I think Liverpool United will drop off. United dropping off because I think there'll be a lot of off-field distractions if the takeover doesn't happen, and it doesn't look like it'll happen anytime soon. So Arsenal and City, number one, number two. It remains to be seen if City can actually push Arsenal. If City get the right amount of players, right number of players who, adapt to Pep's strategy from the word go. If that happens, then it'll be City season. Or else Arsenal have a tremendous foundation to build on what they did last season and actually go for number one. So honestly, I think Arsenal are good for title challenges this season. As Sergio said, maybe quarter finalists in Champions League is something they can achieve. But as he said, group stage, I think they might be, paired up with maybe like a Bayern Munich, which will be fun to watch for neutrals like me. And then there's the case of the domestic cup. Whatever you think of it, if they get that one domestic trophy, it is good to kick on from next season if they fail to win the Premier League this season.
Chordo, this is what you think will be a successful season for the owners. What are your expectations? This
I
season,
would.
second, come on. It has to be the title.
It has to be the title. It has to be the title. I mean, see, it's simple. There's no way I would have thought of this like 12 months ago.
Same.
Football fans are so fickle-minded. Like, and somehow we like, there's no moderation. We are either like extreme in terms of positivity or negativity. And last season I was like, oh my goodness, we bottled like a tougher position. What will happen next? Tottenham is going up. Chelsea just won the Champions League and they've got Tuchel buying all these players. Liverpool is so good. They just like they took City to like the last day of the season in the league. And City are City. How do we compete with this? And now I'm talking about Arsenal potentially winning the league. But yeah, that is what I would think Arsenal should go for. My heart says that Arsenal can win the league, but
They
95 points.
definitely can win the league. I
95
definitely think
points is it's crazy. Nine, getting 95 points is very tough, but I really want Arsenal to win the league. I think they can win the league.
I think it's almost like you have to beat City twice
Oh
and then
yeah.
you will have the league. That's the way to
You
go.
you'll have to turn City over at least once, for sure.
So there we have it, our 16th episode in the bag. Our first episode with a guest speaker on, the ardent Arsenal fan in short, Joe. And yeah, please like, subscribe, follow, comment. Do let us know if you need any other changes in our podcast. Welcome to make changes as well. Love to hear what you think of it. Also, please do follow our Instagram page and like, subscribe, comment there as well. So there you have it. Our 16th episode is done. See you next time.